Welcome to the Heart Matters Podcast with your host, Ibn Leon. Join us as we explore the intricacies of spirituality and self-improvement. Gain a fresh perspective on enhancing your spiritual, emotional, and mental well-being through the fusion of spirituality and self-improvement. Enjoy Ibn's engaging conversations with guests from diverse backgrounds. They share unique perspectives on personal growth and holistic health. From spiritual leaders to relationship experts, entrepreneurs to creatives, each episode delivers knowledge and inspiration. Tune into the Heart Matters Podcast for profound conversations and practical advice, empowering you to live your best life. Chapter 5, Inspiring Stories. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Heart Matters Podcast. I am your host, Lewis Mars, relationship and spiritual life coach. It is my mission and mantra to help the women and couples achieve deeper connection, intimacy, and communication with one another and or with the creator of the heavens and the earth. We have Dr. Celeste Holbrook back on the program. She is going to talk about sex again. We love it. She is a sexologist, speaker, and author who teaches women practical action steps for building a connective and pleasurable sex life. She helps women learn how to access their sensual side and make intimate decisions from a place of liberation instead of obligation. We talked about that on the last program. Welcome Dr. Celeste Holbrook back to the Heart Matters. How you doing, Celeste? You all right?
Hi, Lewis. I am doing really well. I'm so happy to be back. You're so kind to have me back on the show.
And listen, I talked, me and my coach had a conversation after you were on, because I always send her, you know, once I finish with the podcast, I always send her a copy of it, you know, so she can listen to it and do her, do what she does, you know. And she says, yeah, that Dr. Celeste Holbrook was fantastic. You know, you need to get her back on there. So I said, yeah, she was. You know, she was, you know, she was funny, she was open, you know, she talked, you know, and she talked, and my coach was like, listen, she talked about sexual relations, not in a dirty or filthy way, but in a sensible way. You know what I'm saying? So we was like, yeah, well, let's get back in touch with Celeste and have her back on. All right, so let's tell the people what it is that you do.
Yeah. Well, I like that you say I'm sensible, because I feel like I'm like the most practical sexologist. I want to give people sex education in a friendly, accessible, non-pornographic, but not purity culture way, like somewhere in the middle. So that's what I do. I have a practice. I live in Fort Worth, Texas, but I have a virtual practice. So I see all my clients virtually on Zoom, and I basically help people have hard sex conversations. So I help people who experience low libido, sexual shame, painful intercourse, difficult conversations about sex. I help people work through those and find a rhythm in their sex life that works for both of them in the section of life that they're in currently.
Okay, so, all right, but let's talk about this sexual shame. What does that entail?
Well, Dr. Tina Shermer Sellers likes to say that she thinks that sexual shame is the original shame that we feel. So when we are between 12 months and 18 months is when we first are told not to touch ourselves. So that's the first time we're kind of exploring with our hands and reaching down towards our genitalia. And typically a parent will say, well, brush your hand away and say, don't touch yourself, or that's dirty. And so we think that sexual shame is one of the original forms of shame that we feel as humans. And so this continues out through our certainly our childhood, certainly our adolescence and our young adulthood. And shame can manifest from a lot of different things. So some direct links are things like, you know, being told your genitals are dirty. But some indirect ways shame manifests is when your trusted adults don't actually talk to you about sex. And so you feel like it is something that is supposed to be secretive or hidden, or if you feel sexual feelings or sexual desire, you are not okay, or that it's wrong. And so shame manifests in a lot of different ways, and it typically manifests for most people. Sometimes more for people who maybe grew up in an institution that said things like sex before this certain time is sinful, or nobody's going to want you if you have sex. A lot of these messages are directed towards women. And so in our adulthood, we get affected and our sex lives are affected because our body holds on to a lot of that shame and can't just shut off. You know, like if I've been told that I'm going to be worth less if I have sex before I'm married, when I get married, my body doesn't just shut off that message. It doesn't know a marriage certificate, right? So I grew up thinking sex is kind of a dangerous thing. My body continues that thinking even when I start to have sex, even though it is with a consenting, beautiful, loving partner, my body might say, this is that thing that I was told was dangerous this whole time, so I'm going to try and shut down. So we experience things like low libido or sexual pain, you know, not wanting to have sex, disgust with our genitals. All of those things are and can be manifestations of shame from when we are younger.
Wow. That's
I know.
Wow. Okay. All right. Listen. All right. So we got to talk about some things today. All right. So let's deal with the sexual conversation. Well, I don't really know what that means, you know, because I just, you know. So, you know, what does that mean? What are you coming with here?
Well, first of all, Lewis, I really like that you don't carry much shame around sexuality. It makes me very happy. You've done the work.
I don't even know what that means. All I'm saying is that I like it. You know what I'm saying? And I know that it is a natural. It's something that we do because we have these urges and these wants. So if that's what it means, then Right. Okay. All right. So what are the conversations that need to be had surrounding sex between two people?
Right. Well, if you think about how we build a sexual experience, so let's build a sexual experience together, right? So the first thing you have to know is you have to know what's going to happen, or what are the possibilities of what's going to happen? What are the things that I would like to have happen in a sexual experience, right? So that's the very base layer. You have to know what sex looks like for you in order to engage in sex, right? Very basic. The next foundational layer of our sexual experience will be consent. So safe sex and consensual sex, meaning I know enough about my body in order to give consent for somebody else to touch it or to kiss it or whatever. And so that is a conversation and that is an exploration. So knowing about your body means I'm able to touch my body in ways that I know can bring arousal, or I know how to communicate that to a partner. I like to be touched in this way, or this feels good. Can you do more of this, right? All of those conversations are ways in which we are giving and receiving consent, checking in things like, is this okay? You want me to slow down? How are you feeling? Are you feeling good? You know, all of those conversations in a sexual experience are giving and receiving consent. And it's very, very important to do that, because if we don't feel safe in a sexual scenario, we can't feel pleasure. We can't feel like we belong in it. We can't feel liberation. We can't feel eroticism. So those conversations surrounding what's going to happen and what's not going to happen, what feels good and what I could do without, are foundational to figuring out this feels amazing. So those are the sexual conversations within a sex life that are really important within the sexual experience. And then outside of the sexual experience are conversations like, hey, you and I are both off work Thursday at lunch. Should we meet at home and have an erotic experience, right? So helping, especially later on in life, as we have kids and jobs and more demands and more responsibilities, it is important to make sex more intentional and to make it something that we plan on and can anticipate instead of something that we wait to have happen spontaneously. Now, can sex still happen spontaneously? Sure. But being intentional about it typically makes sex in the long term better. So those conversations about intentionality, along with conversations about consent that make sex hotter and more erotic, are the conversations I'm talking about.
Okay, now I had a question, because when you were talking about the conversations inside of the sexual experience, I'm saying to myself, like, where's the spontaneity? You know what I'm saying? If you're constantly like, okay, is this okay? Is that all right? Does this feel good? Okay, because to me, it's like, you know, it's like two actors on stage,
right?
You know, to play, you know what I mean? There's a chemistry and a level of, you know, where they just feeding off each other, you know, to me, you know, that's what sex is supposed to be like. So, I mean, what is all of this? What is all of this talking like? What is that?
Well, remember, communication doesn't always have to be verbal. So I hear you communicating a lot in your sexual experience, but it is more like body language. Consent is really nuanced and bigger, right? So consent between me and my partner who I've been with for 12 years looks different than consent with somebody that you've hooked up with for one day. Right? It's going to look different. I'm going to have to ask more questions. We're going to have to check in more. But with a partner you've been in for a long time, consent is going to look a little different because you know them better. And so sex amalgamates and matriculates and changes as we are with somebody for a long time. Now, that doesn't mean you don't still need consent. You always need consent, but it may look different. It may look like a conversation you've had a while ago to know that, yeah, this is good all the time for me, unless I tell you otherwise. It may look like we had this conversation 10 years ago that this was a hard limit. I don't ever want to try this thing. You can never ask me again. And that's a hard limit. And so unless I bring it up, it's off the table forever. So consent is nuanced and broad and not always verbal, but always has to be there.
Okay, so what are some of the things that couples, the man or the woman, say, look, you know what I mean? I ain't doing that. You know what I mean? He wanted to do that. She wanted to, that. I ain't about that.
Oh, I mean, anything that you can think of would be somebody's hard limit, right? Like, I never want to have sex with the lights on. I never want to try anal sex. I never want to try missionary. I mean, it could be really anything that somebody's not comfortable doing for whatever reason, for trauma, for, you know, shame reasons, for who knows what reasons. They just don't like it. It's uncomfortable. I have back pain. Whatever it is, there can be hard limits on literally anything out there. No, you disagree? Tell me the things.
No, I'm speaking from a position of knowing what I like.
Right.
You know what I mean? I know what I like. You know what I mean? So when I ask these questions, I'm speaking from that point of view, but also I want to know what some of your clients, when they come and they're having these conversations with you, with their partner, you know what I'm saying? What are the common things where partners are like, look, you know, this is off limits. We're not doing that.
Yeah. Well, a very common one is things like bringing a third party into the bedroom, like having a threesome is a hard limit for a lot of people. Unwanted pain or pain in general is a hard limit for lots of people. I don't want to feel pain. I don't want to be flogged. I don't want to be spanked. That could be a hard limit. Anal play is a hard limit for some people, for whatever reason. Yeah, those are a few that are kind of more common probably than others.
Okay. All right. So let's clear up some, because I read this article. I looked at this article that you wrote, right? Let me read the title here for you. So it says the 14 crazy weird sex facts about men you never learned in sex ed. yeah. Okay, yeah. So we're not going to go through all of them. I just put down a few, okay, you know, that I want to mention, and I want you to just talk about these for a minute, okay, right? And the first one that I put down, which I thought was really interesting because I didn't know that, you know, and I still don't, until you explain it to me. You said that men have a G-spot too.
Right. So we think that, so let's talk about the female G-spot or vulva owners have a G-spot, and then we can talk about how that relates to penis owners. So vulva owners have a G-spot that is internal inside the vaginal canal, a little way up and on the anterior side. So the front side of the vagina. And we know that spot to be a cluster of tissue that is kind of sitting right behind the end of the clitoris. And I wish your listeners could kind of like get a visual here, but it's right behind the edge of the clitoris. And we think that that cluster of tissues actually is what would be, if they had a Y chromosome, a male prostate. So we kind of consider the male prostate the G spot for penis owners. And so if you want to stimulate the prostate, you can do it at the perineum, which is in between the scrotum and the anus. You can kind of push on that area right there and you can get some diffused stimulation. So you're going through tissue, or you can access the prostate through the anus with anal play. And you can do that with a finger or a small anal toy. Remember, you're always going to use something with a phalanged base or a hinge on it. A hilt on it, or a string or something that you can make sure you hold on to. But yes, you can stimulate the prostate, which would be the equivalent of the male G-spot through the wall of the anus. There you go.
I'm not interested.
See, you have hard limits. It's good. Huh? Totally fine.
Yeah, is that mine? Yeah, because I was young.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Okay. It's not for everybody.
All right. Okay. All right. I understand. Okay. So the second one that I put down is he can't change his size. Now you have all of this stuff out, you know what I'm saying? Where, you know, you got pills and you got tubes and does any of that stuff even work?
Okay. So not talking about going from flaccid to erection, right? Obviously size changes in that way. Right. But the size that you're born with is the size that you're born with. It's not something that you can necessarily change as you get older. Also remember that size matters far less than a lot of other things in sex. And if you have a female partner, most female partners will say size doesn't matter as much as your ability to stimulate her clitoris. We know that most women have their first and most of their orgasms through clitoral stimulation. So vaginal penetration isn't necessarily high on our list of things that feel good. Therefore, size is not necessarily one of the things that we're all that concerned about typically. Obviously, there are some vulva owners who do care. But yes, the size you're born with is the size that you kind of end up with. There are kind of some extreme ways to change size a little bit. But what I really want your listeners to hear is that whatever size you're with is beautiful, is perfect.
Okay, so what is, you know, why do women talk about these things? Why do they talk about these things with their girlfriends, that he was he well endowed and things like that? Why do they discuss these matters if it is not of great importance?
Because toxic masculinity affects females too. And so when we hear in society that size matters, and we're also not given great sex education or empowered to know what matters to us or to speak up about what feels good to us, then we kind of go with whatever society is saying. And for the lifetime of when we've been having sex up until today, white men have kind of co-opted the conversation on sex. And so we are influenced by hundreds and hundreds of years of white men telling us what good sex is. And because the size of your penis has historically equaled the size of manliness, because white men made it so, we kind of are still feeling those effects. So again, there are women who do care about the fullness or how it feels in their vagina. And that, I'm not discounting that at all. But the vast majority of women typically feel more pleasure through external stimulation, which has nothing to do or very little to do with size.
Okay, explain this to me, this external stimulation. Elaborate.
Yes. So let me tell you a little story.
I like stories.
Okay. So have you heard of a guy named Sigmund Freud?
I'm
familiar with him. Father of psychology, right?
Right.
So Freud in the early 20th century did some studies, and he decided that after a woman started her period, so after she hit puberty, if she could not have an orgasm through vaginal stimulation and only through clitoral stimulation, which is on the outside of the body, she was considered infantile or childish. And so he gave these women who could not reach orgasm through vaginal penetration the term frigid. And so that term stuck for 80 plus years, and we still hear it today sometimes, of women who maybe have low libido. It's like kind of morphed into women who have low libido or a low arousal, or think they have low libido simply because they can't have an orgasm through vaginal penetration, are considered frigid. When we actually know that most women have their first and most of their orgasms, we think about 70% of the time through external stimulation. So the clitoris resides on the outside of the body. There's the glans clitoris, which is the little, like the little man in the canoe, if you will. It's on the very top of the vulva, right? And then it has a large internal structure that is below or underneath the labia or the lips. This is the pleasure organ for vulva owners. The vaginal canal is a reproductive organ. So I want us to think about them a little bit separately. Vaginal canal is how we get pregnant. The clitoris is how we feel pleasure. In penis owners, it's an all-in-one system. It's the penis is the urination system, the pleasure system, and the reproductive system. However, I think we were creatively, intelligently designed or evolved, however you want to think about it, to have the clitoris outside of the vaginal canal. Because can you imagine having all those nerve endings that we have in our clitoris inside a vaginal canal during childbirth? We would never have second children, right? So it is very important for our pleasure system to be outside of the place that we birth children, so that we can have less pain when birthing children. So we have less sensitivity inside the vaginal canal than we do on our clitoris. And that's for very specific, important reasons. But because of people like Freud, who told us that that was less important because penile vaginal penetration is very important for men, or feels the best for men typically. And so that was how sex was defined, is penis in a vagina. When, if we really want to define it through vulva owners terms, external stimulation, fingering, oral sex, grinding, all of those things typically feel better for female or for vulva owners than vaginal stimulation. So I'm a big fan of teaching outer course, and that it is just as valid as intercourse. that's my story, and I'm real passionate about it.
This is, yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, because yeah. All right. So how did you learn all of this stuff?
Oh man, that's a good question. So I grew up in a really conservative Christian home and community in small town Texas. I was not given great sex education. I was told I was supposed to wait until I was married and then that sex would be good. And then sex wasn't good. It was really painful. And it was because I didn't have the right information, really. And so I was already getting a PhD in health behavior. So I started studying sexual behavior when I was first married, and it started to kind of amalgamate, and I kind of fixed my own sexual pain. And then I figured if I could help myself, then, you know, maybe I could help somebody else who's struggling out there too. So my training is through ASECT, which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, AASECT.org, which I believe is the best certifying body for sex educators, counselors, and therapists. So that's where I get my training. It's a very rigid process, but it's worth it. And you can imagine you have to go through a fairly intense process to be able to counsel people on their most vulnerable space, right?
Okay, so how long did this take?
Well, I already have a PhD in health behavior. And so a lot of that was able to transfer to my certificate. But the process of getting certified takes, depending on how fast you can do your hours, but it could take a year, 2 years. It's taken me about 3 years because I went slowly. So, but it's a combination of hours, education, which I already had, so that clicked a lot of boxes. And then you have to get recertified every so often. So it's an intense process, and it needs to be. So you don't have just anybody trying to counsel sex or educate on sex.
Okay. Now let's go back to the list with the men. So okay. The third thing that I wrote down is that he can't usually go again.
Yes. So the way in which penises are set up is that when you go through the sexual response cycle, which is a 4 or 5 part process, which is desire, I want to have sex, arousal, which is I'm getting an erection, I feel like I want to have sex in my body, not just my brain, desires in my brain, arousals in my body. Then plateau is the phase where things have to go at the right rhythm and pressure in order for me to have an orgasm. And so the right rhythm and pressure is really important for things like if you're giving a blowjob, you want to have the right rhythm in plateau. So you maybe think about the song, Push It. That's the right, like 180 beats per minute. That's the right tempo for getting somebody off, right? In general, right? Everybody's a little different, but you have to go the right tempo and the right pressure. You're at plateau, like things have to happen to the same pressure. This is for vulva owners and penis owners. Then you have orgasm, which kind of everybody understands, which is the involuntary pelvic floor contractions. That's for men and for women. So it's involuntary contractions. So that's why ejaculate comes out in spurts. It's because of that pelvic floor contracting. And that's the same for vulva owners. It's a involuntary contraction. And then on the other side of that is what we call refractory period, which gets us back to your original question of why men typically can't go again very soon, because men have a longer refractory period for semen to kind of build up again, for blood to kind of enter into the penis again, and to build an erection again takes some time. And so sometimes when men are younger, it can be a short amount of time, but as we age, penis owners typically need more time to be able to go again. So this is how vulva owners can sometimes have multiple orgasms, is simply because our refractory period can be very short and we can get back into plateau and orgasm again and again. Whereas with penis owners, the refractory period is just longer, takes more time.
Wow. All right. So this is the last one that I wrote, because I didn't write all 14 of them down.
Okay.
Right. So the last one is he doesn't think about sex every 7 seconds, because this is a myth. You know, this is a big myth, you know, that men always are always thinking about, you know, sexual relations.
Yeah. So what I really want listeners to hear from this is that sex is not a need. Sex is not a need. It is a desire. And we have often been sold the idea that especially men have needs, sexual needs. And this kind of gets sold as like men are always thinking about sex, or men have needs. So you need to dress a certain way so they aren't tempted by their needs. When in reality, sex is a desire. You don't need to have sex in order to live your life. You could go the rest of your life without sex and you would be just fine. So maybe men think about sex more. It's possible, right? But it's not probable. We just, as a society, allow this type of thinking because we have been sold the idea that sex is a need that men have. But what happens when we do this is like, oh, I get stuck. What happens when we do this, if we grow up in purity culture and we're told to, you know, dress a certain way so that men are not tempted, or that, you know, men have uncontrollable desires, it actually teaches us to close down and fear men and fear sex with them. And so perpetuating these kinds of myths, like men think about sex every 7 seconds, perpetuates our fear of men. And so I don't really care how often men think about sex. It is more the idea that we should do something about that, or it's our responsibility to do something about that sexual thought that is harmful. Men can control their sexual urges just like women can control their sexual urges, because none of us have sexual needs. We have sexual desires, which may be really strong and it may be difficult, but it can be done.
Okay, so when did you make this pivot?
What do you mean?
From just being a regular doctor to a sexologist.
I was still in my PhD program when I started thinking about it. I officially opened my practice in 2013, but before that, I was the lead sex educator for a large sex toy company. And so it was really early on in my career. I was still getting my PhD when I started teaching sexuality at the university I was teaching at, and then, you know, worked in a corporate job for a few years before I opened my own practice. So I would say I started teaching sexuality in 2008, and I've had my own practice since 2013.
Okay, so what do you mean you've been working in a sex toy company?
Yeah, so...
yeah, because this, I didn't see that on your bio.
I know.
I didn't see that. Did you leave that out intentionally?
Well, no, I can't put everything in. I'm a complex and beautiful creature, Lewis. I can't put everything in the bio. It's 2-3 sentences, right? So I worked for a large in-home party plan company, that sold sex toys. It's now one of the biggest, sex toy retailers in the United States, Puerto Rico, and I want to say Mexico. But what we found was these women were going into other women's homes and doing these fun sex toy parties, and they're selling their sex toys and doing these fun presentations and everything. But what was happening was the women at the party were coming to speak to the consultant, the seller, and were saying like, hey, I'm experiencing this, or I have low libido. What should I do about this? Or sex kind of hurts a little bit. What should I do about that? Or all kinds of questions. So my job at the company was to make sure that the consultants had good information, good sex ed information, from how to give a great blowjob to what to do if somebody asked you about sexual pain. So it was a beautiful position, and I felt very fortunate that the company understood the need for great sex education, simply because we're not getting great sex education. And these women were going into these homes. They're kind of like acting as health educators to the participants at the party, not only having a fun time selling sex toys, but also teaching about sex. And so my job was to make sure that these consultants, we had about 100,000 at the time, had the right sex education information to give to their clients.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a little frivolous question here, because I was thinking about it. I said, I'm going to ask Celeste about this here. Have you read the 50 Shades of Grey series?
Oh, okay. The answer is yes. Do you have a follow-up question?
Yes. Have you seen it or read it or both?
Both. Well, I have read parts of it. I haven't read it all the way through.
But you've seen the movies.
But I've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. These are my follow-up questions then. Okay. So what are the fallacies in the movies? Mm. And what are the realities in the movie?
Oh, those are great questions, Lewis. Those are really great questions. All right. Let's start with fallacies first. The idea that someone must be damaged. So one of the lead protagonists in the movie is, I forget their names, but the dude, the guy, the penis owner.
Yeah.
The idea that he was abused as a kid, and that's why he engages in BDSM, gives us a false sense that something has to be wrong with you to desire sex in this way. Desire kinky sex or bondage sex or whatever. And that's a really bad, wrong message. They also don't work through the most of BDSM, like talking first about what's going to happen and laying down some hard and soft limits and talking about consent first. Those are all things that have to happen before you ever tie anybody up. Also, you never leave somebody tied up by themselves. Like, hard rule across the BDSM community. Most people in the BDSM community hated this movie for a lot of those reasons. Okay, so that was maybe three of the several multiple fallacies. Also, my own personal take on this movie is that the guy had a personality of like a brick outhouse. Like, nobody's going to want to have sex with this guy. He's like totally lame. Anyway, that's just my own opinion.
Why did you take that opinion?
Have you seen the movie?
I saw the first one. I didn't see the second one.
Okay. The first one is all you need to see. He doesn't laugh. He's not funny. He buys her a laptop and considers that enough for her to come have sex with him. That's not okay. He doesn't have a personality. Nobody's gonna want to screw anybody who doesn't have a personality. I'm sorry. No.
Okay, all right. So what are the realities of the movie? What are some of the things that you witnessed that were real?
So it did open up lots of conversation about BDSM, which was a very good thing in the sex toy industry and in couples everywhere talking about, oh, this awoke something within me, especially for vulva owners. This awoke something within me. I want to feel what they are feeling, which is the important clarification of, what you want to do, because I don't necessarily want to do what they're doing, but I want to feel what they're feeling. This feels really interesting to me. So people had a better, more open conversation about what BDSM is, what it looks like, or what it could look like for their own relationship. And that's probably one of the things that it did do to help kind of normalize these types of things. So now people don't really think twice about having, you know, fuzzy handcuffs or tie downs or a blindfold or things like that in their bedroom play. Whereas before the movie, that might have been more considered like a kink role or things like that. So it did normalize the use of these types of sexual experiences for the vast majority of the community. I teach for a sex toy company now. I contract for a sex toy company now called The Velvet Box. And their education began because so many people were coming into the store and asking for these products, but having no idea how to navigate a conversation about using a flogger with your partner.
All right, so let's go back to one of the fallacies that you mentioned about the films, the conversation, because, you know, from what, you know, what I saw, you know, there was no conversation. He said, look, you know, you're just going to be, you know, my submissive, you know, and, you know, you're going, you know, whatever I want to do, this is what I'm going to do, like that, you know? So if, you know, two people want to spice some things up in the bedroom, and they want to bring in some toys, right? Mm-hmm. What is the conversation like? Give me a facsimile of how that talk would go.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So even in a sub and dom role, even if you want to play those role plays, you have to know what your submissive is into, what they are not into, what is okay and what's not okay. Because this isn't true domination. In actuality, submissive has most of the power because they get to decide what happens and what doesn't, right? And the dominant role gets to decide how that happens and gets to enact it, which is great, but they are still working together. They're co-creating this experience. It's not like it's all the dom's responsibility. It is them together saying, like, this is what we could do. This is what I'm not feel comfortable about. So just like we talked about before, there's soft limits. Like, I'm curious. Let's try spanking before we buy a flogger. I'm curious about how this feels. I'm curious about pain in sex and how I can navigate the line between the two. That's a soft limit. I don't really want to be flogged, but I do kind of am curious about being spanked. A hard limit, like we talked about before, is like, I never, ever, ever want to be ball gagged. Never, ever. Don't ever ask me again unless I bring it up. Then we can have another conversation. So that's where you start to navigate what could go on in the sex scene and what is like not going to happen in the sex scene. And this all happens before you're ever aroused or in a sexual scenario. Even with things like if couples are just starting, even things with like, things like tying down, you kind of mess with it beforehand, you know, like, how does this feel? Like, check it out. How do you feel in this? And sometimes it seems like a good idea at the time. And when you get in there, it feels really claustrophobic and you want out. And so there always has to be a safe word. So you have hard limits, soft limits, and you have a safe word that's unrelated to anything you would actually say in a sexual scenario. So yellow kangaroo or, you know, a lot of people use stoplight terms, red, yellow, green. So a way to communicate. And listen, you can totally stay in character while communicating your BDSM needs and wants and desires, right? Like the sexy nurse comes in and she's like, I'm going to give you, you know, 10 whips with my whip. And so she's communicating, but she's staying in character. I always say when I teach BDSM classes, I always say, stay in character like Donald Duck at Disney, because at Disney, they do not break character. And that's what heightens the role. That's what heightens the situation. So until there's a safe word, you can stay in character and still communicate your needs, wants, and desires. You just have to get a little bit creative, but it makes it fun for everybody. So hard limits, soft limits, and a safe word. And then always talk about aftercare. That's another thing that didn't happen in the movie. Talk about what you might need or want after one of these intense situations where you're getting flogged on your back or your ass. Like, what do you want after this is over? After everybody is finished, do you want to cuddle? Do you want to be alone? Do you want to take a shower? Do you want to talk? Do you want to not talk? So So aftercare is something everybody should do in sex anyway, but especially important if there is wanted pain or any kind of outside of the normal sex life that you typically have is going to happen. You have to talk about what you need afterwards. Or if somebody uses a safe word, you have to know what happens then. Like, are we going to completely stop? Are we going to check in and pivot to something else? You know, what is going to happen then? So a lot of things can be helpful for your typical couple to experience the feelings of kink or BDSM in a safe, consensual, exciting, erotic way.
Okay. All right. So, all right. So listen. Now we're gonna have to have you back on to do a live stream.
Okay. I can bring the floggers if you want.
We're going to have you on to do like a live stream on Facebook and YouTube where people can come on and ask questions and like this. You know, we want to, we are trying to officially, you know, have Dr. Celeste Holbrook as the Heart Matters sex therapist.
Hey, all right.
Yeah, so we have you on to do a live spring where people can come on and ask, because this is very informative and people like sex, right. You know, and need to understand it on a more intellectual level, you know. So I appreciate all of this stuff here. You know, I have, my own personal things that I would like to ask, but I'm not going to do that on the show.
Okay. Yes, privacy is important. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Celeste, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you coming back on the program. It is always a pleasure, you know, to have you on. And like I said, we would like to have you back and do a live stream for us so we can get some questions from some people.
Yeah, that'd be really fun. Thank you so much for having me, Lewis. I really appreciate it.
It was such a joy all the time. That was Dr. Celeste Holbrook. I'd like to thank Dr. Holbrook for coming back on the show. This is her second time on the program. She is always very insightful, and she talks about sex education in a very intelligent and dignified way where people can understand it. It was very good to have her on. As I mentioned during the talk, we are going to try to have her back and have a live stream to where people can come on and ask questions. So we're going to try to work that out. But I thank Dr. Celeste Holbrook for coming back on the second time. We're going to release maybe in a couple of weeks, maybe after the holidays, I think we're going to release both of the videos, both of the video episodes with Dr. Holbrook. And I think we're going to do that on the same day. I think that would be a good idea for us to do that. Also, I want to let everybody know that we are releasing the Heart Matters podcast now on audio and on video on YouTube. So you can, now there will be some where we won't be able to release the video. There are certain guests who are not good with the video part. I have a guest that just was on, and we're not going to release the video of it because she mentioned that she wasn't, you know, she wasn't dressed to her satisfaction. She wasn't dressed appropriately. So of course we're not going to put that out on video because she wasn't comfortable with her appearance. So, you know, there will be things like that, but for the most part, we are going to release the Heart Matters now in audio and on video on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, the Heart Matters brand YouTube channel. Anyone who would like to go and check out the channel, please go and check out the Heart Matters brand, Lewis Morris, the Heart Matters brand YouTube channel, and like the channel and subscribe to the channel. We have the interview with Amy Young up already. And we're going to have a couple of more by the time this particular talk comes out. So please check out the channel, and we will put all of the links in the description down below. Also, we are continuing the reading of a treatise on cultivating manhood. We're doing it once a week. We did the foundational pillars, which is truthfulness, courage, and passion. We did those already. So we're going through the book, and we're going to do it once a week until we finish the actual treatise. So guys, stay tuned for that. Also, the relationship survey is still available. It is still available. I don't know if it will be available by the time this particular podcast comes out. It might be, it might not be, but it is still available. Also, anyone who would like any daily wisdom, daily inspiration to check out the new blog posts and podcasts, please go to get in touch with me on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest. Also, you can go to the website and check out all of these things, LuisMorrisCoaching.com. That's LuisMorrisCoaching.com. Also, you can just go to the link tree and everything is available there. All of the packages and the resources that we have are available there. We are just trying to expand and offer more value to everyone. Also, the Heart Matters brand and store is open. We will put the links in the description so you can get that as well. Whoever would like to get any of the books, if you would like to get a treatise on cultivating manhood, we will put that in the link as well so that we'll make that available for you. If you have any questions or concerns or anything that you, any suggestions that you would like, any guests that you would like for us to have on that have something going on that is positive, that can contribute to the Heart Matters community, we welcome your suggestions. You can go to the back of the website and give them. You can DM me on Instagram and Facebook if you like. It's up to you. And we are open to all of that. And please, guys, like and subscribe to the Heart Matters. We would appreciate that. We have a lot of great content coming up. We have a lot of great resources that we're going to be making available to the public. We appreciate you guys' participation, and we will speak to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Heart Matters podcast. For relationship, spiritual, coaching, and resources, go to the Heart Matters brand link tree, which is linktr.ee/LuisMorris. That's linktr.ee/LuisMorris. And we will see you again soon.